Welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast with me, Kathy Love. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. Join me for cutting-edge interviews with leaders in the allied health and business fields, along with plenty of practical content that you can use to make your business practice perfect. Our guest today on the podcast is coming from a long way away. She's actually in China, and she'll probably explain why in a quick minute. But welcome aboard, Karen Finnan. Karen's a physiotherapist and the director of online physio. But when you jump to her website, you'll see that she's a whole lot more. She's a speaker and an author and a mentor and a real, I would describe you, Karen, as a commentator on the telehealth space. How do you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I will say, ni hao, Kathy, from Shanghai in China. Shanghai. It is great to be on the podcast with you. So, yeah, look, I guess I stumbled into telehealth myself a number of years ago, and purely by virtue of the fact that I was one of the early ones in there, I've sort of been part of the space for a while, and it is definitely that period of time where a lot of change has taken place. And I think when something is so new, they look to who is doing it, and rather than, you know, feeling like I was the knower of all things, I was just the one who sort of delved in and did a lot of it. So then, in the last few years, I've certainly had people sort of coming to me and asking me questions about telehealth and also, you know, the future of healthcare and where it's all heading. So, you know, they're conversations that I absolutely love to have. So I would have originally described myself as a physiotherapist and the director of online physio. So we're an entirely online physiotherapy practice, and we specialise in providing long distance consultations for people who have trouble accessing traditional care. But now I also do a bit of consulting to other health professionals and health businesses who are looking themselves to get started in the telehealth space. So I really love doing that work as well.
Paint a picture for us of what online physio is and what it looks like right now.
Yeah, so the first thing that people think is physio, but don't you always use your hands? So I understand that there is a bit of hesitation when we talk about doing physio online, but really when you break it down, a lot of what we do is clinical reasoning. Now, the start of a physio consultation is a big series of question and answer where we learn lots of clues about the injury, and I say we're like detectives. And all of that, of course, converts really well to the online space. From that, it is then guiding a patient to do some tests on themselves rather than us doing them on them, and in the process coming up with our likely diagnosis. Now, from our question and answer, we usually know what's going on, and the physical testing is just to confirm that. It's not really to create the diagnosis from scratch. So really we're using our clinical reasoning to come up with that diagnosis. And now physiotherapy is moving away from a reliance on complex machines and manual techniques and more to supervised exercise programs that are carried out under supervision. And so we're able to beautifully prescribe a rehabilitation program online. Obviously, internet is a great forum for education. And so we put a lot of emphasis into education and empowerment to help our patients to get themselves better with our help. So it's basically a series of question and answer. We jump on a video call, we have an app that we prescribe exercises, and then we're able to follow up either through video call but also through secure messaging and some other sort of avenues of communication that open to up to us because of the fact that we're online.
And what did you learn in those early days about shifting from hands-on to online services?
Yeah, that is a really good question. And this is where I can nudge into being a little controversial to my fellow physios. What I found was that there's a lot of energy and effort that goes into our initial consultation, both in person and online, but perhaps in the follow-up space, we're sometimes verging on doing a little bit of padding. So we have a 20-minute consultation. It might take 5 minutes to update on where they're at and to give them the changes to their program. And then we might spend the remaining 12 minutes doing a bit of calf massage to fill in that time. Now, of course, not always the case. And, of course, often that manual therapy is warranted. But really, we were using it a little bit differently. It's more about question and answer. It's more about frequent contact rather than waiting a whole week to ask a question. So rather than following up with 20 minutes, it was more a few minutes a day. And, you know, we have the ability to sort of touch base. We have sort of a secure, it's almost like text messaging, but in a secure format. So there's a lot more back and forth, frequent contact for shorter periods of time, basically.
And what have you noticed about your customers' experience? Have they been ducks to water, or has it been a little kind of edgy for them?
Yeah, so that's always a big question as well, is how will people approach it? Now, we're a little bit lucky with our online practice because people choose to come to us. So we're a traditional sort of private practice model, albeit online. So people have, you know, found us through different means. They've looked at our website online. They know what we do. So they're coming to us knowing they're not going to get manual therapy and knowing that they're going to have to do some stuff, do some homework to get themselves better. So for the proactive patient, it works unbelievably well. They get all the tools that they need and all the sort of back and forth and follow up. And there are ways through the technology, through forms, through all that sort of stuff, that they can really, really unpack and tell their story, upload imaging, you know, all that sort of stuff. And then, as I said, with the follow-up, it can be more frequent. They don't need to feel bad, you know, asking us a question just randomly here and there. So, yeah, so it works really well for our sort of population because they're choosing to be there and they're choosing to step up and get themselves better.
Yeah, it's such a different way of looking at customer care, for want of a better word, that it can be little and often rather than these events every week. You're in the position to be able to compare manual hands-on care and online care. What are your thoughts about the differences?
Yeah, so there's a lot of debate going on in the physio profession about this at the moment. And the first thing I will say is we as an online practice are not here to eradicate in-person consultations or eradicate manual therapy. Not in any world is that going to happen, or do we want that to happen. All we want, Kathy, is for people to have an alternative. If access is challenged, or if they wouldn't otherwise go to the effort of physically visiting someone, if they come to us because it's a less friction option, great. We want to be able to give them as much value as we can. So we're certainly not looking to get rid of manual therapy. It certainly has its benefits. Having said all of that, there seems to be a bit of research coming through that is manual therapy the be-all, end-all of physiotherapy, or do we need to really look at balancing and tipping the scales back the other way in terms of our education, in terms of exercise-based management, patient empowerment, and all that sort of stuff. So for us, some of the research coming through actually helps, adds weight to our approach, but I will always say there is a place for both.
Yeah. What have you heard about other disciplines providing online services? Psychology, well, they're already pretty well positioned in many ways, but occupational therapy and speech therapy, for instance.
Yeah. So of course, you know, psych's led the way, and that is quite a logical transition.
Yep.
For talk-based therapies. And, you know, I think next on the line, the speeches are doing amazing things. I mean, again, with good quality video, there's so much that they can do. I mean, they're often literally face-to-face. They're not having to look at knees and hips and ankles like we are. So, you know, face-to-face, seeing the mouth, playing the games, you know, I think there's amazing stuff going on in that space. And you know, often in the pediatric space, when we're talking about, you know, kids growing up in rural and remote areas who have, you know, challenged access to that sort of specialty care, there's some great stuff going on there. But then there's also some curveballs. There's some unexpected ones as well. You know, I used to, and I'm ashamed to admit this, but I used to, when I was talking about telehealth, say, oh, so many health professions can be adapted to online. Of course, dentistry would never do it, but blah, blah,
oh,
blah.
Oh, no, as if that would never happen.
And of course, there's teledentistry, certainly a growth of that. So it can be primary diagnostics. So say if we're talking about a remote area that has a community health clinic, they can have an oral camera where they can screen some, you know, oral concerns and send them to an expert in the city to say, look, can we just manage it with antibiotics, or do we need to make the effort to travel? So, you know, there are aspects of all health practice that can be, you know, adapted or converted in some way to the online space because, you know, education is a part of what all of us do.
I hear quite a bit of hesitation from allied health business owners about going into telehealth. I'm not trained in it. There isn't any research, or I haven't read the research. I think that's probably what that sounds like. What will people think? How will it work? How will you bill for it? So there's a whole lot of thinking, as I understand it, around your service delivery model. And I think people use the technology as a really good reason for not kind of getting into it. What are your thoughts on getting started, like those first few steps?
Oh, there's so much in that. So let's start with the research. There's more out there than you think.
Yeah.
And I will be the first to admit, Kathy, that I'd paid a hefty deposit to a website developer to build our first online physio website before I even thought to look up the research.
That's that entrepreneurial spirit running away.
I just in my head said, I know this could work. But look, even 6 or 7 years ago when this was, there was already good research coming through, certainly in the physio space that I honed in on, to say that, you know, things like the diagnosis error is no greater online than it is in person. And also the outcomes, they're the same, if not better, than in-person care. Why? Well, we could, you know, we could reach and say that it's the fact that we're teaching people the tools to get themselves better. You know, I think we can be great as health professionals sometimes at feeding our own ego that they need us to get better. They need our hands. They need our complex procedures to get us better. But, you know, people have an amazing ability to heal themselves with the right coaching. So in terms of the research, it's simply a case of doing the work. Get stuck in, find the evidence, find the research. And, you know, a lot of it is out there and a lot of it is very positive. So I have that all collected in a table. And every time I come across a new article to do with telehealth and physiotherapy, I add it to a table. In terms of, you know, adapting to online and should I just jump in and do it? Well, you still need to be very clear that there is a business case for it. So if you are an in-person clinic in a suburb, you target the suburb and you say, well, maybe the people in our suburb want online consultations. Well, you really need to look at that. When it's competing directly with an in-person service, people are creatures of habit, and that can be really hard to convince them, you know, to transition across if they're getting basically the same thing, but they can see you in person. On the other hand, as a lot of the telehealth services have started, there was just a crying out need for it. There was a hole. So if with telehealth you're creating access where there was none before, or you're solving a problem that people have, that's when it's likely to be a smoother and more viable transition. In terms of sort of your experience and your training, well, there are certainly things you need to think through when you're transitioning to the online space. But when you break it down, if you apply everything back to your normal code of conduct, your normal professional expectations, it's often the same. So you have to keep your patients safe. You have to keep the records secure. You have to, educate them and make sure that they feel, you know, empowered in the process. It's a lot of the same things. So for physio, for example, there are, you know, certain things that I will guide a patient to do on themselves, and I have normal, you know, warnings and safety sort of disclaimers in there. In fact, you know, we can often build them in digitally to our system. And there are some things I'll never be able to replicate online, but I've found that my clinical reasoning often can fill that gap, which I never gave it credit for doing that before when I just had that test I could quickly whip out and do on someone's knee or whatever. So there's so much in there, and I could bang on about this for a while, Kathy, but, yeah, I can understand the barriers to getting started, and it's just a matter of sort of step-by-step going through it and peeling that all back.
Fair to say there's a bit more involved than just jumping on a Skype call.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. This is a really good question. And I think early on, we, for a start, I'll address the term at which a lot of people throw around for telehealth Skype call. We can do a lot better than Skype these days in terms of security and quality. We're at the moment on a Zoom, for example, Kathy, which is a great, you know, much more stable platform. But there's a lot of other platforms out there that are more customized for telehealth. And you've got to look at a number of aspects. How easy is it for the patient to join, for example? So with Zoom, a lot of us are used to using it in the business space, Kathy, but for patients, it is a download. And you forget that once you've used Zoom a few times, but the first time you use it, you have to download it. So how are we making things easier for the patient? Also, is it just a video call? Well, what are the steps that a patient has to take to get to that call, and how easy and logical and friction-free can we make that process? So how do they initiate the consultation? How do they schedule their consultation? How are we getting them the instructions to join the call? Are there details we want to collect before that call from a form? You know, how are they receiving that form? So you've certainly got to think about what I call the whole patient workflow. What step leads to what leads to what? And I think the big thing is also after the video call, what are our next steps then? And, you know, how are you making sure that you're adequately following up? How are you making sure that they're getting the information from the call, perhaps into a summary format? How are you making sure that they're getting their homework? Now, we're guilty, Kathy, as physios of scribbling on bits of paper with stick figures to give people
with stick figures and a ball, and a ball.
Exactly. So how are we doing that better in the digital space? So you're exactly right. It's more than a video call.
Yeah. Let's have some fun talking about the technology. And I bet that the tech that you're using now is completely different to what you might have used even 2 years ago, let alone in 2011 when you opened up your virtual shop. What are some of the tech considerations for getting started with this?
Yeah, so it's a really good question. And I certainly vouch for the fact that you can get started with fairly simple equipment. I like for the barrier of entry to be very low. I think in the telehealth and digital health space, you see lots of big, expensive gadgets, and I don't want people to fall into the trap of thinking that they are necessary to get started. So I literally started with Skype, with my camera built into my laptop, and that's pretty much it. We would make an appointment by emailing back and forth, and then, you know, we would jump on the call, and then I would create a PDF document with their exercises and send it to them. So it's probably not so much the hardware, but the software systems that I use. I now have a much more high-tech webcam. I've even been trialing one that I can move with a remote, so, you know, I can pan down my body if I'm showing people different things. But now I use, you know, a professional appointment booking software, which then automates an email that sends them a form to complete. Once they've done that, they, you know, get given the instructions for the call. We jump on the call immediately after that. A template's completed to give them their customized report. It's customized, but it's from a template, if that makes sense. And they get issued their exercises. And all of that is wrapped up, Kathy, in a project management software. So as soon as somebody makes a financial purchase of a consultation, we trigger a project management tool workflow, which tells us what needs to be done in what time frame to make sure that nothing falls through the cracks.
And how much of that process is automated and doesn't need you to click on it?
So that's the thing that's been crucial over the time of me developing the system is obviously the less time the admin stuff takes me as the health professional, the more value. the happier I am. And also, our time is valuable, Kathy. So the less time I'm using doing admin stuff, the better. Now, there are virtual assistants and whatnot that we use for some aspects of it, but I think even better than that is just simple automation. One thing links to the other, links to the other. So there are a few manual steps in there. Jumping on the call is one, and then filling in the report and sending that off afterwards is another. But most of the rest of that process is completely automated.
That's incredible. I just keep talking for 10 minutes. I'm just loving hearing that.
Yeah, I think I've replaced a whole sort of admin person working on the tech. And funnily enough, you know, I until I got into telehealth, I didn't know I was such a tech boffin, but I absolutely love it. I love how, you know, different softwares work and how they can be connected and talk to each other.
Yeah. Oh, sounds dreamy. So what telehealth is setting people up to do is to start to step away from that time and money exchange and that only face-to-face exchange. It's giving people the opportunity, customers and providers, to fly way beyond geographical areas. And it's also potentially freeing up admin and administrivia, as I call it. What else does it kind of leverage? What else does it kind of do for providers?
Yeah, well, Well, when you bring up that, what came into my mind was pricing, which we haven't talked about.
Yes, let's talk about pricing.
Yeah, also a really good question. So, you know, you mentioned there that sort of money for time. So what we're used to as health professionals is somebody comes in, they pay for that consult and then they go. The next time they come back, they pay for that consult and then they go. But what we found was, as we talked about earlier, Kathy, that people were contacting us more often for smaller things, and it was wonderful. So we completely changed our pricing model from per consult pricing, which we did start with, you pay per video call, to a period of access. And so we have sort of three lengths of access that are our base plans that people can select from, say a week, 4 weeks, or 12 weeks. And we make suggestions as to what conditions may suit which package. And of course, there's the ability to upgrade and extend and all of that sort of stuff. So what we see there happening is that people now have access to you for a period of time. Now, we, by that point, had worked out how much people are wanting to contact us. Some will contact us more, some will less. So you do need to factor that into the pricing. But I think to look at kind of pricing for an outcome or pricing for a period of access is an opportunity in health that we sort of need to look at starting to play with. And interestingly, I've been having conversations with the private health insurers, which is another conversation that we need to have.
We might need one.
Rebates. Yeah, we know, we might. And they're very much, you know, pro package or outcome-based pricing, because then we're motivated as the health professional to get them better rather than getting stuck into this rut of a habit of coming in.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
How's that been understood and embraced by your customers, that they have you for 3 months or until a pain-free period of so long?
So I certainly think they see value in having access to you. Now, if you look at us as general consumers these days, we're used to contacting businesses and the people that we, you know, are interacting with through business in a lot of different means. It can be Facebook Messenger, it can be WhatsApp, it can be emails. That's just a quick and efficient way to get business done. Yet I think we've been very slow to adopt that, and we've been very scared that what if a patient can contact me when I'm sitting on the couch in the evening, you know. So I think that it's logical, and I think it's not that people are finding it wonderful. They're just finding it, yeah, well, why wouldn't I contact, you know, my health professional through messaging or other means? Now, of course, we have to put boundaries around that ourselves. Yeah. And we set an expectation for our patients on, you know, when the time frame of which we'll respond to their messages and all of that sort of stuff. But I think it's expected. And I think when you look at Facebook groups where people are asking health questions and getting answers from people not even qualified in any health
24/7,
profession.
24/7, yeah.
Exactly. You can see that this is the style of communication that people are demanding these days. So I have a wonderful morning routine where I pop up and I just sit with a cuppa and I check through the messages. So I'm effectively treating, but I'm just sitting, and this is where I can be in a cafe or something like that, and I'm just responding to messages, updating, you know, exercise programs accordingly. And, you know, I enjoy it as much as they do.
Mm. So you're batching and blocking those tasks and not letting it be 24 separate replies over 3 days. You're kind of doing them all in one hit. So
absolutely,
it's about how you manage it. It's proactive, reactive.
So important. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, so important. Yeah, definitely. I mean, that works for me just with my lifestyle because, you know, like you, I'm on the move a lot. But, yeah, exactly. You can't be at the end of your phone every time it pings. And I find that you can run business that way. It's just setting the expectations, isn't it? I do the same with emails. I check them twice a day. So
yep, in blocks. Yeah. I've just read a really interesting book about a business book about how emails are running and ruining people's professional days. So, yes, less is more in the email department, I say.
Yeah.
So what you have through online physio is packages of care that are very outcome-based and highly tech-leveraged. What do you imagine allied health services to be looking like in the next 5 years?
Yeah, that's a good question, Kathy. And I think what I'd like to see and what I think will happen is that the expectations for patients will catch up to the fact that online is convenient and it's an option, and the pendulum will swing to the point where they will be requesting it. Now, they already are starting to, but I think that will happen in a greater capacity. So I think we're at a funny transition at the moment where health professionals are just starting to catch on to sort of say, wow, I could have a bit more freedom with this. And patients are sort of starting to go, I can see it's there, but does it work? Is it safe? I think until us as therapists are truly committed and have done it to prove it to ourselves, we can't be the best people to pitch it. So, you know, our patients will have doubts while we have doubts. So, you know, I think over the next 5 years, we'll see it's like online dating. When it first started, Kathy, everyone thought it was a little bit creepy, didn't they?
That's a great example.
Tinder, it's like it's in the vernacular, swipe left, swipe right. So I think we'll make a similar transition in the telehealth space.
Oh, goodness. What can you suggest to help people get a little more comfortable with the technology part of it?
Yeah. So, look, most of us have done sort of a FaceTime call or a Skype call. So, really, it doesn't have to be much more complicated than that. But I think where we get stuck is thinking that now when we're dealing with health and health information and our health profession, that it becomes a little bit scary and is it going to be safe? So the very best thing I can recommend that people do as you well know, Kathy, as health professions, we're always getting tapped on the shoulder by a friend or a relative for a bit of advice or a bit of, you know, a bit of a freebie. Great. Capitalize on that. Hold it at the moment that they're just on the phone call and say, look, it would be great if we could jump on a video call and go through this. So just make it that little bit more formal, agree to a time, give them the instructions to access the call. That might be a really good opportunity to trial a video conferencing software, and it'll be clumsy and it'll be messy and you'll make mistakes and you'll probably get on the phone and say, sorry, is it working from your end? Beautiful, perfect. That's exactly what needs to happen the first time you do it so that you can iron out the kinks. So I would say just jump in and do a free consultation to a friend or family member that's happy to tolerate a little bit of, you know, a bit of glitchiness, and do it. And then once you get started, once you settle into what you know, which is your clinical knowledge, you'll finally realize that it's not so tricky and complicated and scary.
Yeah. And it's exactly the same way that we practice new techniques and tools as hands-on clinicians. I remember getting a new developmental assessment and next thing, you know, my 7-year-old was lined up and doing it and practicing away in a somewhat safe and predictable kind of environment. So I guess it's developing those same muscles.
Oh, that is such a good point. It is so true. And we do need to see telehealth as just another tool in our toolkit. You know, I remember doing a dry needling course for the weekend and I'm like, what, now they're going to unleash me on real people throwing needles at them? So you're exactly right. What do you do to feel comfortable in that situation? You either practice on fellow colleagues or you then practice on family and friends. And then, you know, you sort of get started with it. So that's such a good point. And that's exactly the way we need to approach it.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned right at the top of our conversation that you do some consulting and training. What's that looking like nowadays?
Yeah. So over the last few years, I've started to get a lot of questions from other health professions about how we run our practice. And so I realized that, yeah, there's a bit of a gap there for people sort of knowing how to get started. And so I started just making some videos and writing some blog posts and, you know, it seemed to really help people. So now I sort of put together, I guess, a suite of tools where people who are looking to get started can check off, you know, some of the things that we've talked about, Kathy, you know, video platform selection, you know, also safety things, you know, how do you check your indemnity insurance? How do you make sure you're keeping your data safe? And even down to sort of the physical setup of, you know, have you got a professional background? You don't want that sort of basket of dirty laundry in the background. You wouldn't do that in your physical clinic. So all of those steps I've sort of put together, and now there's a few ways that I'm working with people. I consult directly to some bigger health businesses to help them sort of develop a telehealth strategy. And there's an online program where people can just purchase that. Learn all the sort of bits and pieces and knowledge themselves to equip themselves to get started. So when we're talking about the hesitation points, well, that's a really good way to just visit all those dot points of, have I got this sorted? There's a checklist. There's a couple of really great checklists in there too. That's to say, first of all, to pressure test your idea. Could it be viable? And we talked before about, you know, just by setting up a telehealth service doesn't mean it's filling a proper need. So is it, you know, pressure test your idea, and then are you telehealth ready? So just a full checklist of have you considered all the different things to make you ready to get up and running with your telehealth service.
Now is a really good time to put in your website, because we'll put it in the show notes, but, you know, it's okay if we're paused and people go and find you. What's your website?
Wonderful. Oh, thank you, Kathy. Yeah, so if you just go to karenfinnan.com, and that's karenfinnan.com. So that's where you'll find, and there's a lot of info on there for free, Kathy, as well, just in terms of videos and blogs about all different questions that people have around getting started in telehealth.
You are the absolute queen of videos and vlogs. I love watching your material. I always marvel at how immaculately clean your desk is, though.
Oh, you're making me blush. Yes, look, I guilty as charged, I'm a non-clutter person, and my brain doesn't think straight when there's lots of stuff around. So, but look, I'd be lying if I didn't say I didn't sort of remove a few piles of stuff before I got started.
Oh, that's good.
I started doing blogs and videos, and I think this is a journey everyone sort of works out themselves too, that, you know, I think it took me, you know, an hour to sort of smash out a blog post, and then I realised I'd done 8 videos in that time just sitting with the camera doing little 2 to 3 minute videos. So I thought, something's more efficient here.
Oh, that makes me feel human that you had to move a few piles of stuff. That's, that's good. Definitely. I don't like clutter either, but I am nowhere near your lofty heights. I aspire to that immaculate clean desktop. So your business has gone from strength to strength. What has your business adventure taught you?
Oh, so I think you've got to find your intersection of what, I guess, lights you up. I know that sounds a little bit, you know, daggy, but I must admit, I was sort of, when I started, I would have been sort of, I guess, about 7-8 years into my physio career, and I'd sort of reached a bit of that glass ceiling, you know, full caseload in a private practice, where to from here? I knew I didn't want to run my own practice. And so when I was sort of suddenly by default thrust into business, A, and then also using technology, B, that intersection, health, business and technology, really sort of gave me just a complete transformation in my career and pushed me forward. So I guess in terms of advice, it would be, you know, what's missing? What do you like spending your time on? And you know, how can you make that into you know, a great direction to run with? And then it's just been throwing in, learning, always being sort of open, doing, oh, I had to do so much in the way of business coursework because I just, you know, I didn't have that business background. So, fill in the gaps. And then it's been a transition as the business has matured of sticking with what I love and outsourcing the bits that aren't effective use of my time.
Love it. Who's in your business team? Like who works with you and who works for you?
Yep. So I've got a couple of physios that help out. You know, for example, I always wanted to sort of help out like a stay-at-home mum. So one of the girls, she's just had a baby, and so she's able to sort of do some work from home. And then we have, well, I'm working really closely with my web team. So, you know, they help out with the website. They're digital nomads as well, traveling around the world. I have my virtual assistant who's in the Philippines, and a virtual designer who's also in the Philippines. So that's sort of the core of the team, yeah.
And do you live the laptop lifestyle?
Look, I absolutely do. I have phases of time when I'm home-based. So sometime from a home office, but I really need to get a change of scenery, so I do hop around cafes a lot. And then my husband is an adventurer, and that brings us to the reason why I'm in China. For all the listeners out there, my husband is currently working in China, so I do quite frequently travel overseas and am able to take the business with me in the laptop. And that was a massive part of the motivation in getting started, was being able to be mobile like that. So, yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful. All righty. All of the guests, when I remember to ask them, I don't always remember, get the chance to ask me a question. Is there, this is where my blood pressure goes up, is there anything that you want to ask me?
Oh, that's a really good question.
You don't have to, no rush. We can
The cogs, I can't pass up an opportunity like this, Kathy Love. So, I would say, I don't know if it's been asked before, but what is the face palm that comes up again and again for private practice owners that you see?
The sort of I'm stuck or I've done it again moment.
Not for you personally, but for them. Like, oh, this is 101. Oh, you're not quite getting that right. What's the common mistake?
Fill in this one for you. Many of the wonderful business owners that I talk with are really grappling with the transition from clinician to CEO, as I like to call it. And I'm thinking of this being the title of my next book. I probably shouldn't say that. I should actually register the title. And anyway, too late now. And so it's that moment. No, don't tell anyone. No one's listening. It's that moment, or it's a series of 365 moments. Where you're releasing, consciously releasing what you went to uni to do and what you really, really love, but the business is running you and it's feeling a little of like a runaway train, and it's who do I need to be to run this business? Who do I need to be for my team? Who do I need to be appropriately financially rewarded? Who do I need to be a thought leader in the areas that I believe in? And that's a big deal. I remember that bit personally as well. And it can be potentially a facepalm moment if there isn't that awareness and that transition planning to being business owner, team leader. When it doesn't happen, I'm listening to business owners who work two full-time jobs and have lost their evenings and weekends. They see X number of clients during the day, and then they do the midnight management, as I call it, doing the business side of things in the evenings and weekends. And I kind of ache for those people. I've been there and I've done that, and I managed to crane myself out of the clinical side of things and had a much more successful business as a result. But, geez, it's a tough place.
Oh, yeah, that's so true. And in that situation, lucky they have you. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you. And you as well, because the work you do is so transformative and has the ability to have such a big impact on people's health and well-being.
I drive myself, Kathy, with a little why and a big why. Like the little why is what actually gets me out of bed each morning. You know, we all like to think it's about changing the world, but that look, you know, the location independence I just crave and I love, and to be able to work from my laptop really sort of is a micro driver for me personally. But it all wouldn't happen or wouldn't drive overall if there wasn't the big why, which is, you know, I found a way that could reach more people and help more people. And that was a huge burden to keep from sharing. You know what I mean? Like, if I have a way that more people can reach healthcare and I'm not sharing that, then shame on me, you know? Mm. So I think it's important to have both, because I tell you what, when the bed's comfy, it's not that big global why, because it's too big. You don't feel like you're going to help that. But if it's like, well, okay, if I do a bit of work today, then I can go to China and visit my husband and spend time with him and still continue working. So I think it's important to have both.
Yeah, absolutely. Love it. All righty. Let's make sure we get you in as a guest next year, and you can give us a bit of an update on all things online physio and telehealth, because as I hear it, there are steady changes happening. We probably should dig into that private health insurance conversation at some point as well. And it will be a very fast emerging tool of trade. So if you're happy to reconnect, that will be a mighty fine thing.
Oh, I would love to.
All righty. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much, Kathy. It's been great chatting.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. For show notes and other resources, please visit practicemadeperfectpodcast.com. While you are there, you can subscribe for future episodes and continue your business adventure with me. And please be sure to share this and other episodes with your friends and colleagues.